Welcome to the Kitchen Counter Podcast, episode 57, Latin American Favorites. Hey everybody, thank you so much for downloading and listening to this episode of the show. I'm Roger, your host, and this is the podcast that helps aspiring home cooks grow their skills and confidence in the kitchen. I'm so glad you're joining me today because I've got a really, really fun conversation lined up for you about Latin American food. My friend Jairo Benavidiamos joins me today to talk about dishes that you might not typically find out and about in your typical Mexican restaurant, for example, or certainly not outside of the major metropolitan area. So we're going to go over some of our favorite Latin American dishes. And as you listen to this, if anything makes you hungry, makes you want to try it, which I'm guaranteeing you're going to find something in here you're going to want to go and cook. I've put links to recipes for each of these dishes in the show notes at kitchencounterpodcast.com/57. That's the number 57. So if you head over there, I've just got some short show notes and again, a link to kind of a representative or a typical, or typical is probably the wrong word, but anyway, a recipe to get you started for all of the dishes we talk about in the show. So I don't want to keep you waiting, and I want to get right to the conversation. So I hope you enjoy my conversation with Jairo on our Latin American favorites. Well, thanks for being here, Jairo. This is really cool.
Well, thanks for finally inviting me on, Roger. I mean, I've been only pandering to begging to come onto this show for the better part of a year now, maybe longer.
Well, I'm sure we're going to rock people's minds now. The wait was worth it. And what's cool is having you on, we're going to talk about Latin American food. And I haven't done this yet. In fact, I think most of the food I talk about is, I haven't really done a lot of what I guess I would consider ethnic cuisine, like aside from the common stuff like Italian or, you know what I mean? So I haven't gone into Latin America, Central or South America. I haven't done really any African. I haven't done much Asian. So it'll be kind of fun. I want to start doing more of this. So this will be a fun conversation.
Awesome, man. I'm really looking forward to it. You're hitting the heartstrings here with the Latin American food.
It's going to be fun. So you sent me an email. Oh, I should say, first of all, you are a co-host on the True Bromance Film Podcast.
That's right.
Which you've been gracious enough to have me on a couple of times.
Yes.
So tell us a little bit about that and where we can find you, and then we'll jump into Latin America.
Awesome. So, we're, like you said, we're the True Bromance Film Podcast. We are, we're a movie review podcast, but, it's more for the casual film goer. It's not going into like the depths of, you know, a Fellini script or his camera angles and all that stuff. It's just two old friends talking, having some beer and chewing it up and just having fun talking about film. Film is really the, kind of just the catalyst to open up that conversation. I mean, you've been on a couple of times, so you know how that goes. So we keep it light and we try to keep it fun and energetic. But yeah, you can find us anywhere you find your podcast. It's True Bromance Film Podcast. You got to add a little film in there because some savages are trying to infringe on our territory. We're really active on Twitter at True Bromance Cast. That's true without the E. You can just find us anywhere that iTunes, Stitcher, all those places.
Okay, excellent. So you sent me an email. Why don't you refresh my memory and kind of fill everybody in on what we're kind of talking about today? Because you had an interesting question or observation maybe about food in the United States, at least when it comes to Latin America cuisine. So go ahead.
So I grew up in Miami, which is a very diverse city. Granted, it's very heavy into Latin American and Central and kind of the Caribbean population. So you get this big melting pot of food. And I joined the Army right after September 11th. And, throughout my travels, everywhere you go that's not in these major metropolitan areas, I'd run into this situation where there was no Latin American food. And even further, it was just everybody referred to me as Mexican. And I am not Mexican. I was born in Peru. My father's Colombian. And I was actually raised kind of in a very Cuban style environment. But I had trouble finding, you know, all of these great dishes that I grew up with. So that's the kind of what I sent you was like, what's your experience with that as far as, you know, going around and kind of getting out there and finding something that, and I love Mexican food. That's not a knock on Mexican food at all. I'll tear up a taco. I'll tear up a, probably ate Mexican food at least once a week during my time, you know, in the Army. But I just kind of had a hankering for those other flavors.
Yeah, that's really interesting, too, because I hadn't, you know, not having the life experience that you've had and the cultural background that you've had, I haven't really ever thought of it in terms like that. So I live in Oregon, obviously, and we have a lot of Mexican food here because we have a large migrant worker population, at least as of late. Maybe that hasn't been the case forever in Oregon, but we have pretty good Mexican food here, but we don't have much else as far as the Latin American cuisine goes. And I've done some traveling around the States, as have you. Now, you are Peruvian and Colombian, but were you born in Miami?
I was born in Peru. Oh, when I moved to the United States, I was one.
Okay.
So I basically was raised in Miami. But my parents met here in the States as exchange students.
Oh, okay, like, okay.
In Indiana or Connecticut or something like that. I don't know the story.
Okay, gotcha. Okay, so so my experience, I guess, kind of reflects yours, but I wasn't really actively looking for all these different Latin American cuisines. But through other jobs and positions I've had in the past, I've been fortunate enough to be able to travel to a lot of Latin America. I've never been to South America. But I've traveled all over Latin America, and I've got to learn some of the different cuisine. And you're right. It's like I come home, and I'm like, oh, I can't find 95% of this anywhere. You know, you go to the local Mexican restaurant,
right,
and it's you know, tacos and enchiladas and Tostitos, and that's, you know, and then variations thereof. I'm not being generous. I'm you know, but you know what I mean. So you're right. It is
absolutely
hard to find that kind of stuff around. So it would be kind of fun, we thought, just to kind of talk about Latin American cuisine. And then towards the end of the show, you're actually going to share a recipe with us that I think will be a fun recipe for people to put in their toolbox to use.
It's yeah,
a sauce. So we're going to talk about chimichurri sauce.
And you know what the thing about the chimichurri sauce is? It's very diverse. You can add it to a lot of things. You can just top it over pretty much any protein. Work it into rice. You can do anything with it, really. So yeah, it'll be fun.
Okay. So we're going to go over that, and I'll make sure, for the show notes for this recipe, which will be kitchencounterpodcast.com/57. That's 5-7. I'll make sure to put the recipe in the show notes if anybody needs to get it and print it out. So I think it's interesting, you know, on the topic of Latin American cuisine, and I guess it's kind of almost common sense on why Mexican food is so prevalent in the United States. Obviously, they're our southernmost neighbor. So where have you been in the U.S.? And, you know, can you remember any times that you've actually seen non-Mexican food? Anything ever make an impression?
So that's a good question, Roger. I have traveled extensively across the United States because of my job. So I've been through all the major metropolitan areas, including some kind of rural areas where they have military bases, like Fort Leavenworth I've been to a time or two. Yeah, not exactly the bastion of Latin American cuisine there. But, you know, New York, San Diego, Washington, D.C., Miami, Tampa, Chicago has a lot of Latin American influence there as well. But I guess one that kind of sticks out is I had an extended stay in Washington, D.C., and I went to this like Peruvian chicken place. So Peruvians will take their chicken and kind of roast it rotisserie style, but they've got something they're doing with it. There's something they're putting on the chicken. Maybe it's a marinade or the seasonings, and then they kind of pan fry it, I think. It is stellar. Absolutely stellar. And I was able to get that in Washington, D.C. I think before that, the last time I had eaten that style of chicken was in Peru, maybe like I was 10 years old or something like that, because I used to go and visit quite a bit. So, yeah.
Okay, cool. So this is probably a good segue into our kind of the segment that we wanted to do, because what you do on your show, which is fun, is you do like a top list of whatever the topic happens to be, you know, whatever
right.
the movie is. So I thought we could do the same thing here, which would be kind of fun, because honestly, we could probably have an entire podcast series on Latin American food.
Right.
We'd never cover it all. We'd never even get close to covering it all. So I thought it'd be fun if we each shared our top five favorite Latin American dishes.
I'm excited. I did tons of research on this, and it was really, really difficult to narrow it down to five. And like we discussed before the show, I don't think that these are my top five. These are just great dishes that I grew up loving.
Right.
But there's so many more out there, and I encourage all your listeners and anybody who, you know, enjoys trying out the spice of life and variety and things like that, to, you know, just go on one of these websites or something and type – you know, Colombian dishes or Peruvian dishes or Puerto Rican, Dominican. They all have their own flair. They all have their own flavors, and they're just incredible dishes.
I agree. And what we'll do, if you're listening and you're interested about any of these dishes we bring up, we'll put links to like a representative recipe for each of these dishes in the show notes. So if you hear us talk about something, you're like, wow, I want to find out more about that. Well, you can head over to, again, kitchencounterpodcast.com/57 and find it there. So let's just go into it. And I don't have these in any particular order, like from most to least top five. I just kind of wrote them down, you know, as they came to me. So I'm going to let you go first, Jairo. What's your first favorite Latin American dish?
So this one is something, this is a Peruvian dish, and this is a dish that my grandmother used to make for me. Oof. She makes it for me every time I see her because she remembers that I loved it. So it's that dish, and it's called a seco de carne. It's basically like a cilantro beef stew. It's braised. So if anybody wants to know how to braise something, go back and listen to your episode on braising. But the cilantro and the spinach are really the big flavors that come into this. So, it's, you know, it's just what it sounds like. It's small cube beef with this cilantro spinach sauce, garlic, onion. Peruvians use something, what's called ají amarillo, which is basically yellow pepper, like a yellow pepper paste that's indigenous to South America. And you can buy all this stuff now online, which used to be really hard to get. But now I've started making these dishes quite a bit because I can go on Amazon and just type it and they'll mail it to me. I keep the stuff handy and I'm nowhere near Peru. So
that's a great point. That's a great point because I would imagine a lot of these dishes, you can't just roll down to your local grocery store. And in a lot of cases, if you have like a Mexican grocery store in town, they probably won't have a lot of this stuff either because those are very regionally focused.
Absolutely. That yellow pepper is very hard to get in the paste form that you'll need it for the recipe, but I love it. You serve it with a little bit of white rice. My grandmother always made it with white beans, just on the side and just tear it all up. My grandfather used to mix it all up and make one giant ball of food, which always like appalled. I was always appalled by it. 'Cause like, man, savor those flavors that he's putting together, man. But yeah, that's my number one. Seco de carne.
Seco de carne. All right. I'm going to stumble over the accent and the.
Oh, I'm throwing the accent all over the show. I'm going to roll my R's.
I do speak a bit of Spanish, by the way. So just FYI.
Awesome.
So my first one here, I've only had this one place, but I had the good fortune to travel to Guatemala several times for work. And if you've listened to my show, which I know you have, you know that I really like kind of one pot meals. I love just, you know, stews and braised dishes and everything where it's just all in one bowl and it's just so savory. There's this dish that's actually an indigenous Mayan dish that I had in Guatemala at a restaurant. It wasn't out in the countryside or anything, but it's called Subanique.
I've never heard of that one.
Oh, it's so good. And it's very hard to find recipes for. I think I know of one good recipe. I'll link to it in the show notes. And you don't find it anywhere in the United States. I've never had it. I've had it every time I've gone down there, but I've never seen it anywhere else. It's basically a really rich, thick stew where the base – I have to look at my notes here because I can't remember exactly. So I wrote it down. Yeah. So you're looking at red bell peppers, tomatoes, onions, ancho chilies, like Thai-style chilies, and it's kind of blended to make this really thick sauce. And then for the protein, it has roasted chicken, beef – kind of simmered in it all day. And it's just this really savory, delicious. I mean, it's just wonderful. And, I'll put the recipe and they also serve it in Guatemala with these little peppers. They're called chiltepe peppers. Have you ever had those, Jairo?
No, never had it.
There's these little, they're really hot. They're these little green peppers. They look like anywhere from like a pea sized to like a garbanzo bean sized. And they just serve it in a little bowl and you just eat them like in between bites. And it's just such a great experience.
Are they really hot though?
I would say they're hotter than a jalapeno, but they're not like the hottest pepper I've ever eaten.
What's the goal though of eating the pepper in between? I mean, like to cleanse the palate or something or burn yourself?
Yeah, I think so. Because the subanique is so rich. It's just so deep and rich. The pepper kind of gives you like a sharp bite that's just kind of not, it's a totally opposite flavor palate.
Oh, wow. Yeah, well, I'm going to have to look that up. I'm definitely going to hit those show notes because that sounds like something I'd tear up.
All right. So what's your next one?
Okay, so my next one is a dish, also a Peruvian dish. It's called causa. And I don't know if you've ever heard of this, but it's a cold dish, and it's basically a casserole sort of thing where you take yellow peppers. I mean, I'm sorry, where you take yellow potatoes, you cook them down, and you make like kind of like a very dense mashed potato. And you season that again with the ají amarillo, and then you make like a kind of like a tuna salad sort of thing. And you layer it. So you'll take your casserole dish, you layer the potato, the first layer, then you take the second layer of traditionally I've always had it with tuna salad, but you can use chicken, any kind of seafood salad, as long as it's savory and not sweet. And then you'll take the next layer of potato and you put it right on top. You take that, kind of wrap it, and you chill it in your fridge for like a half hour to an hour, and you serve it in little square chunks with any kind. Some people put sauce on it, like a creamy sauce, but I just eat it just like that. It's so good. My mom knows how to make it really well, but I've seen, like, in doing the research, I saw variations of this where people like put avocado in the middle. They put all kinds of stuff in the middle, but yeah, it's a very rich and decadent dish. Traditionally served maybe like as I've always had it as an appetizer, like a small version of it, but I've also eaten enough of it that it could be an entire meal. But it's really, really dense and really, really rich.
What's the name one more time?
It's called causa, C-A-U-S-A.
Okay, I'm going to check that out. So my next one is actually probably more Caribbean than Latin American, but I consider the Caribbean to be
Anything south of Miami, I count as Latin America.
So this is a dish that is kind of famous in Belize. And my wife and I, we actually got married in Belize, and so we were down there for a couple of weeks, and we had this every chance we could get after we discovered it. And it sounds so simple. I've never been able to replicate it well at home. And it's simply stewed chicken with red beans and rice. I don't know exactly how they make it. I mean, I've looked it up, but I cannot replicate it. They cook the rice and the beans with coconut water and coconut milk. So you kind of have that rich, sweet, you know, flavor in the rice and the beans. And then part of what they do with the stewed chicken is they make an achiote paste.
Yes.
Where they take annatto seeds, right, and grind it up. And annatto is basically, you know, did you know cheddar cheese is not yellow naturally?
Is it white?
It's white. Huh. If you're doing it traditionally, the way cheddar cheese gets that yellow color is from annatto seed. Okay. So it has this really red, orange, deep, kind of almost like a dye-like color. So that's how this stewed chicken really takes on this almost like red golden color, and it's slow cooked, you know, fall off the bone. It doesn't sound spectacular, and maybe part of it, you know, when you travel to places and you have the food there, because you're somewhere interesting and exotic, everything tastes better, but it's so delicious. I've never been able to master it at home, which is a tragedy, but that's my second one, stewed chicken and red beans and rice from Belize.
That dish is actually very prevalent throughout all of those countries, especially like Puerto Rico, the Dominican Republic. They all do it. Cuba does it. I just had it at a potluck. Somebody in my office, actually, I don't know where he's from. He's Latin American, and he brought it in, and it was go time. I was pestering him the entire potluck to give me the recipe that his wife made. And he just wouldn't give it to me. He wouldn't give it up. I mean, I've done favors for him nonstop. He just won't give this recipe up.
Yeah, no, I can't replicate it. So what do you got next?
Okay, so this one I'm going to Puerto Rico for, and this is a very simple one. It's called Puerto Rican pernil. And it's essentially, you take a pork shoulder and you put it in the oven. That's it. And, but I mean, there's some prep to it. You keep the picnic of the shoulder or whatever you call it. You can call it various names. You want to get it with the skin still on, still attached to it. And then what you do is you put little stab marks into the meat, and you make a paste out of like garlic, olive oil, and some other seasonings. And you just poke it in there. You make a paste out of it and you poke it in there. You let it marinate for a day or two. And then you put it in the oven about 350 and just, no cover, no nothing, because the skin acts kind of as a cover for it. It holds all those juices in. You turn it about every hour until the very end, where the very end you want to crank up the heat to about like 350, 400 and have the skin facing up so it gets really hard and crunchy. and you score it a little bit to let the fat, the layer of fat that's right under the skin come out. Roger, man, that is a feast and a half. I made it last year for Christmas, and it was – because it's a traditionally in the holiday dish. It's a very, very
heavy. It sounds
heavy
like it might
dish.
Be, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's what Puerto Ricans and Cubans do it, Dominicans do it. It's just amazing. And you typically eat this in Puerto Rico. You will eat it with a dish called arroz con gandules. And it's basically – it's just rice, pigeon peas, and some sort of pork fat. Like I made it with bacon and just absolute heaven.
It sounds good. You know, throw a piece of pork in the oven for a few hours and I'm a happy man.
Pretty yeah.
Sure it, make it, so I'm going to check
that garlic and all that stuff like infuses the meat. And then for me, I'm always the one fighting over the skin, you know, get that hot, really hard, crunchy skin. I just tear it off and just walk away.
Nice. So here's one that's going to be near and dear to you. I'm guessing, Cuban sandwich.
Oh, okay. So I have this on my list as well.
Yeah.
Like a variety of it.
Okay. Okay. So now I'm not even familiar with the varieties. But I can tell you that – so I've been to Miami, Fort Lauderdale, Tampa, Ybor City, all that stuff. I try to get a Cuban sandwich or several whenever I'm down there. But
right.
I mean it might be the best sandwich ever invented. I mean it's just the perfect ingredients.
I'm definitely partial.
So I'm going to go through the ingredients from memory here because I didn't write it down. But tell me what I miss. So you've okay. got bread. I think Cuban bread is the variety it calls for. But I think any kind of, you know, Italian loaf would probably
yeah.
even work. Right?
You can use like a French baguette
okay.
or anything. Really.
Okay. And then you've got yellow mustard. That's your only condiment typically, I think. And then you've got ham.
Right.
You've got some sort of a Swiss cheese.
Yep.
And then you've got pickles.
Yep.
And then you put the top of the, what I forget.
You forgot one. The roast pork. So you got two kinds of pork in there. So you got the roast pork that's,
right.
that's kind of, you can even use the pernil, like leftovers of from the pernil that you made. And then like the ham has to be sweet. So it's like a combo of both.
I'm early menu planning for next week here. So, yeah. Okay. So, and then roast pork, then you throw the other, half of the bread on top and then you press it like in a panini press or just on a plancha or tons of butter, or just throw it in a cast iron skillet or whatever and just weigh it down and flip it. I mean, you can do it multiple ways, but there's something – it's just the best. The pickles to me are what really
– yes.
I don't know what it is, but pickles on that sandwich blows my mind. I could eat that sandwich all day, every day.
Little fact that there's a big difference between the way it's done in Tampa and the way it's done in Miami. I don't know what – I just moved to Tampa about 2 years ago, but after growing up in Miami, they had like salami and stuff to it.
I've heard
here
that.
In Tampa.
I've
yeah,
heard that.
And
yeah.
it's a little different. So the one that I was going to provide was the medianoche sandwich. It translates directly to midnight. So the ingredients that you rolled out are exactly the same, except for the bread. The bread is like a sweet version. It's a little bit smaller and it's sweet like an egg bread. It's got like a yellow tint to it. So on top of having that big melting pot of the roast pork and the ham and the pickle and all that, you've got like a sweet finish to the top of it. When the next time you're down here or you're anywhere, ask for a medianoche. It directly translates in Spanish as midnight, a midnight sandwich, because it's the sandwich you'll eat. You know,
after you've been partying all night.
Yeah, after you've been partying all night. Yeah.
Or the first half of the night.
Yeah, it's perfect.
Excellent. Excellent. So, okay. So I stole one of yours, so you can go next. What do you got? So we both have a Cuban sandwich.
Yeah. So then – well, actually, that would be – since I provided – I think you're next.
Okay, I'll go next. So yeah. I got a couple of rather traditional ones next, and I just love them anytime I can get a hold of them if they're made well. And I don't make them because they are kind of a pain to make, but we know a guy that will take all day to make these once in a while, and I'll buy a dozen or a couple dozen. I'll freeze
them. I feel that you're about to steal my next one too.
Tamales?
No, so close. Okay, got it.
No, tamales. I mean, I don't know what it is about just a really great beef tamale, but mm-hmm. They're a treat because you just don't find them just anywhere, and they're really time-consuming to make. And just that – the masa, kind of that corn
yes.
shell, I don't even know how to explain it. They're just so good. I mean, do you like tamales?
I grew up with them. So my aunt is my aunt from my father's side is a very like ethnic Colombian woman. And she used to make these so well. And they're also prevalent throughout Latin America. And there's slight changes and differences. But she would give us to us in the like the banana leaf all folded up You know, all that stuff. Just, oh, man, so good.
Now, do Colombian tamales use the masa, the cornmeal?
Yes,
well?
They do. Okay. Yeah, but it's got like egg in it. It's okay. Got chunks of beef vice like the filling beef, mm-hmm. like the ground beef. It's mm-hmm. like hunks of beef that okay. go into it.
Okay. Fantastic. What do you got next?
Okay, so my last one is this one is also all over Latin America. I thought you were going to steal it. And this is an empanada.
Oh, that's my next one.
Okay, so we can talk about it.
All right, go.
I had to pick one because I wanted to talk about it, and because where different countries, it's prevalent in Portugal, Spain, all throughout Latin America. Everybody has their own variation of it. Like the Argentinians, the pastry on the outside is made of like a wheat flour, so it has kind of almost a phyllo dough taste to it. You know, it's crunchy. It's a pastry filled with beef, chicken. I've seen seafood ones. I've seen cheese.
So if you've never seen an empanada, the best way I can describe them, and this is probably sacrilegious, but you know those little fruit pies you buy in the store, like the little Hostess fruit pies?
Yes.
It looks like that on the outside. It's like that shape, kind of a hand pie.
Yeah.
That's a terrible description. But you know what I mean? It's like a hand pie. And then it's filled with all sorts of savory. I suppose it could be sweet stuff as well, but I've only really had savory meat fillings. Oh, it's just...
It's like a half circle, sort of.
Yeah,
I've
right,
had it
like exactly.
that.
Exactly. Like but if I've you were to take a tortilla and fold it over.
Exactly.
It's that shape, but it's dough. It's not tortilla. It's
yeah. So I'm very partial to the Colombian ones. And because what they do is they take like a cornmeal sort of thing, and it's thicker. Like the outside is like crunchier. It's made of a masa, basically, the outside, a yellow masa. And then they just fold it over, and the inside is like we said, beef, chicken, or something, but it's always served with like an ají. And by ají, they call it ají, but it's really just like lime juice, chopped up peppers, tomatoes, cilantro, sometimes a little avocado, kind of like a little dish on the side. You kind of just scoop it on there. Glorious. You can bake them, fry them. It's street food. It's or an appetizer in a nice restaurant. I love them.
Oh yeah. I mean, I'm partial to all of them. So mean, yeah. You put an empanada near me and it's go time, like you said earlier. So yeah, that's hilarious. We both had the last one is the same. And like we said, we'll put links to recipes for these in the show notes. And I'd actually love to hear from any listener who thinks we missed something tragic. We mentioned before we recorded, we left things like tacos off the list. Although, you know, tacos are so, versatile and delicious. They'd certainly be on my top five list, but just in the sake of interest, I left them off because like my top five could all be tacos, you know? Go ahead.
The taco has become like a piece of American culture. I watched this documentary called the Search for General Tso, when it's a discussion about General Tso and how Chinese food has become American food. I mean, yes, it's part of their culture, and the same thing goes for the taco. You know, you can find it anywhere you can find a taco. I do have like a couple honorables.
Oh yeah. What do you got?
Ceviche is a big thing for me. I like it with fish, but I've also made it with various types of seafood. Let that lime juice and that ají kind of cook it out for a couple hours. Amazing.
Right. So ceviche, if you're listening, you're not familiar, it's basically, it's raw, some sort of a raw fish or raw protein, seafood of some sort. That's right. Been allowed to sit in a lime juice mixture, and it kind of cures it, if you will. Right. It cold cooks it in a way.
Like the flesh will turn white as if you've cooked it.
Yeah. 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 Ceviche is delicious.
Yeah. And then the last one I have is an arepa. Have you ever heard of that? Mm-hmm. So basically kind of like a corn circular thing. And there's various kinds. I've had it different in Colombia versus Cuba versus, you know, in Miami, it's sweet. So you'll take like a shell, like a kind of a pounded down, sort of like a masa, and then you put cheese in the middle and then another layer, and then you just fry it over a griddle. And it's they serve it in stadiums in Miami. Like you go to the Dolphins game or the Hurricanes game, a baseball game, you can just buy them there for a couple bucks and just walk around. It's street food as well.
That sounds good.
It's okay. Really good. You dig it, man.
I'm going to have a Latin American food month at my house, I think. We'll see what my wife and child think of that. But That's awesome. So again, if anybody has one we miss, or if you want to share what your favorite Latin American food is, we'd love to hear about it. So you can send an email to feedback@kitchencounterpodcast.com. Jairo and I kind of looked at this as sort of like a sampler, like we said before. There's no way we could talk about it. I mean, this could be an entire podcast series, but we just kind of wanted to have a little fun and talk about maybe some lesser known or less common Latin American food. But to wrap up, Jairo, you are going to share with us your go-to sauce recipe. We mentioned at the very beginning of the show, a chimichurri sauce. Now, that's not to be confused with the chimichanga. All right. That's a made up dish. That's like an American Mexican made up thing. But chimichurri is, I believe, South American. Is it Argentinian or is it?
I've seen it in Colombian cuisine. I've seen it in Argentinian cuisine, but now it's pretty much all over South America.
So I'm going to do an episode in the relative near future. I'm always making promises, never following through, but I'm going to do an episode in the near future about sauces, or maybe a few episodes about sauces. Chimichurri would not have been one of those sauces. So I'm really excited to hear from you. Tell us what a chimichurri is, when you use it, and how you make it, because it's really simple.
So chimichurri is it's based primarily on – you can use parsley or cilantro. I've done it both ways, and I'm starting to get a little more partial to the cilantro. But basically, it's extremely, extremely simple. All you take is cilantro or parsley, wash it down good, and cut off the stems, you know, obviously. And then really – you can hand chop it, or you can stick it in a food processor to get it really fine. But I've gotten to the point where I just hand chop it and get it, you know, to where it's very, very fine. You just throw it in a bowl or some sort of container. I like to put it into a Tupperware so I can cover it and then just throw it into the fridge and then rework it the next day. I take a little bit of olive oil and I'll just cover that chopped. I'll just keep saying cilantro for right now, but you can use parsley as well. You just cover it with that, and then you add tons of fresh garlic. You just take your garlic, mash it, chop it up real fine and put it in there as well. It's pretty much as you want. I would say I'm a garlic nut, so I'll use the entire bulb. Like I'll use the whole thing. I'll run through it. But you can probably get away with, I'd say, about half of it, you know, and still have that bold flavor. And then you just let it sit. You know, you let that kind of just sit for a couple hours and you pour it over meat. In South America, we put it over steak, chicken. I've done it over not so much fish, but pork, definitely. Any protein, I put it over rice, beans, anything. You can tinker with it and add a little bit of lime juice, maybe like a little tablespoon of lime juice to your concoction, or something spicy like a ají amarillo or even like a little bit of jalapeno just to add some kick to it if you want to. But the base of it is just that bunch. You know, you go to your store and it always comes in a little – in a bunch, you know, just a bunch of parsley or a bunch of cilantro. And as far as the measurement on the olive oil, you just wanted to kind of cover it a little bit.
So could you throw – so those three ingredients, can you just throw all of those in a food processor, pulse it a few times, and you're good to go?
You could.
Okay.
I mean, I don't know about the garlic, though. I don't know if it would chop up fine enough. I like mine, you know, because you don't want to like bite into it. You get like one giant hunk of
a zing of raw garlic, right? Yeah.
Yeah. But you probably have like this big fancy proof processor that will like emulsify everything, you know, like mash it to death.
the magic. Yeah. What is it? The magic bullet, something like that. Okay. That's excellent. And it's really great to bring up because grilling season is upon us. Well, I mean, for you in Tampa, it's always grilling season, I'm sure.
Always grilling season, buddy.
the northern half of the United States, grilling season is approaching. If you're bored making steak, flank steak, you know, sirloin, whatever it is, you're barbecuing, you want to change it up, make a chimichurri sauce.
My family is very partial to the skirt steak. It's gotten expensive. It used to be a really cheap cut of meat, but in the last like 5 years, the price has like doubled and tripled. So I love a good skirt steak and, you know, slicing it against the, kind of against the grain. So you get that nice taste and then just a little piece of skirt steak and a big chunk of a big scoop of chimichurri sauce and you're good to go.
I love it. Well, I think we're about out of time, but I want to thank you very much for coming on and schooling me in Latin American food. We'll definitely do this again. Maybe we'll pick a deeper dive topic. Instead of just doing kind of
the
survey topic. So we'll talk about that.
I would love to.
Okay, cool.
It's an honor being on your show finally, man. It's my favorite show. Because it's, you know, I listen to a lot of movie podcasts because I'm a movie podcaster. But yours is the only show that deviates away from the norm, and it's a must listen to me, except for the monkey bread thing.
Oh.
We make it every Christmas, so, and I'm not a sweet tooth guy, so it's got like this resonance with me, like, oh God, monkey bread again. You know, every year it's the monkey bread. The kids go nuts over it and all that stuff.
Kids love it. Yeah, kids love it. All right.
Okay. That's the only one I'm like, oh, monkey bread? Wait a minute.
All
I got
right.
a quick fix of something I already know how to make.
Yeah, well, I will do a Latin American quick fix next, and we'll see what
there
happens.
There you go. There
All right, Cairo, one more time, where can people find you?
We love to engage on Twitter quite a bit, so at True Bromance Cast, that's true without the E on Twitter. But, you know, you can Google us, True Bromance Film Podcast. It'll come right up. Throw that into iTunes. It'll find it. Stitcher, it'll find it. I'd love to hear from anybody who heard this.
You and Barry do a great job. You guys are hilarious. So you guys are a lot of fun. So I highly recommend it.
Thank you, man.
All right, Cairo. Thanks, man.
Appreciate it.
Well, I hope you enjoyed that conversation with Cairo. As you can tell, he is very passionate and knowledgeable about food, especially Latin American food. Pretty much everything Cairo mentioned in this episode, I'm ready to go and make. So again, if you head over to kitchencounterpodcast.com/57, you can find show notes and links to some of these recipes. If you liked today's show, I'd really appreciate it if you told your friends about it, if you think they'd get some goodness out of the podcast. And of course, if you feel up to it, you can always send me feedback at feedback@kitchencounterpodcast.com. I'd love to hear from you. And of course, you can find me on Twitter at TKC Podcast and Facebook at facebook.com/kitchencounterpodcast. And yeah, connect. I'd love to hear from you if you have any ideas for upcoming shows or just if you want to say hi or share a recipe, whatever. Let me know. I'd love to hear from you. All right, folks, that's it for today. Once again, I'm Roger with the Kitchen Counter Podcast. And until next time, happy cooking.